Hello, everyone, and welcome back to We're All Mad Here. I'm your host, Rachel. And I'm just going to slide in here and pretend I didn't go AWOL for a year and a half, okay? If you do want to know what I got up to, I'll put it at the end of the episode. But for now, let's get right into the story. Arthur Evelyn St. John Waugh came into the world the way he lived in it, dramatically. When his mother Catherine went into labor on October 28, 1903, the baby decided that waiting for the doctor was for plebes. It was reported that baby Arthur was born in great haste before the doctor could arrive. Since the baby's father was also named Arthur, the second child of Arthur and Catherine Waugh was to be called Evelyn. Baby Evelyn had a big brother named Alec, and in 1903, the Waugh family lived in North London. Arthur Sr. was a publisher and a literary critic, and Catherine was a woman in the early 1900s. Catherine schooled both of her sons at home, and when Evelyn was four, the family moved from London to a rural farming community in Hampstead. While Evelyn and Alec both loved reading and writing, Evelyn felt that his father liked Alec better and was often excluded when the pair would do things together. Evelyn did, however, have a close relationship with his mother, as well as his two aunts, whom the family would visit every summer in Somerset. As you'll see throughout the episode, Evelyn could get a little obsessive about things. And it was during these visits that Evelyn found his first obsession, Anglican religious rituals. While the Waugh parents weren't terribly religious, Evelyn adopted the belief system enthusiastically. He joined his local Anglican church and served as an altar boy both at home and in Somerset when he visited his aunts. When Evelyn was 10, he was enrolled in a prep school. By that time, he was already a prolific writer. He'd spent his younger years writing plays for the neighborhood children to put on, and had already written his first short story, The Curse of the Horse Race. As Evelyn went through school, he was well-liked enough, though he was sometimes a bit of a bully towards younger boys. When World War I started, Evelyn, 11 at the time, organized a pistol troop to defend their neighborhood from the Germans, who were about to invade Britain. The boys made forts, practiced marches, and wore makeshift uniforms. But Evelyn also helped the war effort for real. He and other members of his Boy Scout troop were sometimes used as messengers by the local war office. Before Evelyn left his grammar school, he started the school magazine, The Cynic. But his mind was on the future, and in particular, the secondary school he was to attend. Arthur Sr. had attended the Old Sherburnian Society, and older brother Alec followed in his footsteps. Unfortunately for Evelyn, Alec had the same flair for the dramatic as his brother, and ended up getting expelled from the society for a story he had written and published. The novella was about life at a school, clearly the society, and detailed the hijinks of the boys who attended, including their homosexual relationships, one of which Alec had been caught in real life while at school. This being published in 1917, people were, of course, scandalized, and not only did the school throw Alec out, they refused to allow Evelyn to attend. Evelyn was furious. Alec's novella had been published mere months before Evelyn was to start at the society, and now he had to rethink his education, and very quickly. He ended up attending Lancing College, which he regarded as inferior to the Old Sherburnian Society. However, once he started in May of 1917, Evelyn ended up really liking Lancing. He was known as an aesthete, which apparently is someone who believes that art should be produced to be beautiful and artists shouldn't worry about morality, allegory, or message while creating it. In keeping with that reputation, in November 1917, 14-year-old Evelyn wrote an essay entitled In Defense of Cubism. Soon after, the essay was published in the arts magazine Drawing and Design, his first published piece. He founded what he called the Corpse Club, and requirements for membership included being bored stiff. It's good to see teenage boy humor hasn't changed in over 100 years. Evelyn had a close relationship with some of his teachers who encouraged his writing and his artistic talent. One teacher, Francis Creese, taught Evelyn calligraphy and decorative design. While in secondary school, Evelyn gave up his childhood obsession with Anglicanism. He went all the way to the other end of the spectrum, becoming an atheist, or at the very least, agnostic. He was an extremely involved student, being a house captain, editor of the school magazine, president of the debating society, and won a number of art and literary prizes. His dedication won him a spot to study modern history at Oxford University. But after all his effort in college, Evelyn wasn't at all dedicated to his studies once at university. He wrote to a friend shortly after starting school in December 1921, "I do no work here and never go to chapel." Instead of focusing on his studies, like many university students today, Evelyn was more focused on partying. While part of the Oxford Debating Society, Evelyn spoke out against the school adopting prohibition, because that would ruin all his fun. He smoked a pipe and spent afternoons riding his bike around campus. Despite neglecting his schoolwork, though, Evelyn passed all of his exams that year. In Evelyn's second year at Oxford, his partying and debauchery increased. He met two students whom he referred to as sophisticated Etonians, Harold Acton and Brian Howard. Like Evelyn, Acton and Howard were writers, and the trio formed an avant-garde circle called the Hypocrites Club. The name came from the fact that their club motto was "water is best" in Greek, but they drank exclusively wine, beer, and spirits at their meetings. College boys always think they're so clever. As one might expect, Evelyn became a heavy drinker as a result. He was the secretary of the Hypocrites Club and said that he loved the club's, quote, "artistic, social, and homosexual values." The club was the stamping ground of half my Oxford life. Given his relationships later in life, it seems that Evelyn was bisexual and didn't seem worried about hiding it, which was rather remarkable given that it was the early 1920s. He had several gay relationships while at Oxford and reportedly would use the longest one as inspiration later for his novel Brideshead Revisited. In Evelyn's final year at Oxford, his mental health started to decline. In 1924, he wrote to a friend at home, "I have been living very intensely these last 3 weeks. For the last fortnight, I have been nearly insane. I may perhaps one day, in a later time, tell you of some of the things that have happened." His exam results that year were poor and resulted in him losing his scholarship. While researching this episode, I had a hard time figuring out how the exam and graduation system works. Because he lost his scholarship, he couldn't afford his last term of school, but he still got a third degree after taking 8 out of his 9 exams. From what I understand, the best degree is the first degree, and a third is not what you want. But even though he earned a third degree, he didn't technically graduate from Oxford. I could not really figure this out. Even though Evelyn's studies suffered during his last term of school, he continued to participate in university activities, like being a film critic for the school magazine, the secretary of the debate society, and becoming a talented graphic artist, all while, of course, regularly getting drunk with the Hypocrites Club. His lack of dedication to his studies frustrated his tutors, who knew he was capable of getting a first degree. Evelyn especially had beef with one particular tutor, his history tutor, Charles Crutwell, who pushed Evelyn to work hard, and Evelyn pushed right back. Even long after Evelyn had left Oxford, he used Crutwell's surname in his writing exclusively for minor characters who were annoying or gross. Unable to return to Oxford, Evelyn went back to his parents' place, as so many of us do when our lives fall apart. While there, he started a novel called The Temple at Thatch and worked on a student film with his hypocrite friends, though only one of these projects would be finished. Trying to move on from Oxford, in the fall of 1924, Evelyn started at Heatherley's, now known as the Heatherley School of Fine Arts. His new academic pursuit, however, was short-lived. Evelyn soon got bored and, since Oxford was nearby, spent all of his time there instead, hanging out with his school chums and partying in London. But constant partying is expensive, so when Evelyn ran out of money, he started applying for jobs. To his delight, he got one almost immediately and packed his bags for North Wales, where he would be teaching. But the UK in January is notoriously dreary, and Evelyn found himself getting depressed again. He did his best at teaching, but decided just a month or two into the job to find something else. He heard about a job he really wanted, a secretarial position for the Scottish writer C.K. Scott Moncrief in Pisa, Italy. Evelyn applied and was so confident and enthusiastic about the job that he put in his teaching resignation at the same time, and then didn't get the secretarial job. Around this time, Evelyn had also sent off his in-progress novel, The Temple at Thatch, to his Oxford friend Harold Acton. Harold returned the manuscript with a note saying that while the story wasn't his style, he thought that it would be worthwhile for Evelyn to send it to some other acquaintances who would enjoy it. Though Harold meant this to be encouraging, Evelyn could only take in the fact that Harold wasn't drawn to his writing. And between that, leaving his job prematurely, and not getting a job he really wanted, Evelyn was pretty much ready to throw in the towel. He burned the manuscript and a short time later left his clothes on a beach with a note atop them and walked into the water. But there's a reason that just a few years earlier, fellow writer Virginia Woolf had chose to walk into a river to kill herself, not the ocean. Because upon entering the water, Evelyn was immediately stung by a jellyfish and crawled back to shore, no longer interested in dying. After his suicide was prevented by a sea creature, Evelyn went back to teaching. For the next 2 years, Evelyn taught at schools in Buckinghamshire and Notting Hill. Unfortunately, the jellyfish sting had not gotten rid of Evelyn's vices, and he was dismissed from the Buckinghamshire school for, and I quote, "drunken seduction of a school matron." After that disappointment and finding a new teaching job, Evelyn spent his evenings taking carpentry classes, seriously considering a career change. As sometimes happens, the second one decides to move their life in a different direction, the original plan starts picking up speed. In 1926 and 27, Evelyn's writing career picked up. In 1926, his short story, The Balance, was written in an experimental modernist style, was published in an anthology, as well as by the Shakespearehead Press. These publications led to a contract with Duckworth Publishers. They commissioned Evelyn to write a full-length biography of the poet Dante Gabriel Rossetti. As he wrote the biography, Evelyn also began working on what would be his novel Decline and Fall. However, the life of a freelance writer is a stressful one. Even with three contracts, Evelyn was still low on writing work. He did get hired by the Daily Express newspaper, but was fired after a month. Been there, Evelyn. In 1927, as he was writing that biography, Evelyn met Evelyn. No, I don't mean that he really got in touch with himself. I mean he met Evelyn Gardner, a London socialite who was a little bit of a loose cannon. The two Evelyns, later known as He Evelyn and She Evelyn, met when he, Evelyn's brother Alec, interviewed her, among other socialites, for a tabloid article about the Bright Young Things. The Bright Young Things was a group of bohemian aristocrats. What made She Evelyn stand out was that at 24, She Evelyn lived in a flat with her friend Pansy. They were two very modern women, and to drive that label home, when the two Evelyns met, She Evelyn had been engaged and unengaged 9 times. He Evelyn became the 10th fiancé. Now, He Evelyn certainly had his share of skeletons in the closet and vices, but She Evelyn's former fiancés had just as much baggage, so she wasn't driven away. Three of the fiancés were a soldier, a ship's purser, and a middle-aged divorcee, respectively. She Evelyn, at the time, was barely out of her teens, but despite her past choice of men, She Evelyn's father really focused on He Evelyn's flaws. Mr. Gardner felt that He Evelyn lacked moral fiber and kept unsuitable company. Sir, have you met your daughter? Despite the Gardner parents' reservations, the Evelyns were engaged in December of 1927. The two Evelyns' lives could not have been more different. She Evelyn was living in a flat in London, most likely paying for it with the money Evelyn either got from her dad or from her suitors, while he, Evelyn, was trying to make £4 stretch a whole week, an allowance given to him by his dad. Every now and then, he'd make money writing book reviews, but it was a lean time financially. During the courtship, Evelyn's biography of the poet Rossetti was well received, though he, Evelyn, was miffed that most reviewers assumed that he was female. A few months after his marriage, he, Evelyn, turned in the first draft of Decline and Fall to his regular publisher, Duckworth, who refused to accept it, labeling it too obscene. So Evelyn showed it to Chapman and Hall, another publishing house, who gave him an advance to write the final draft of the book. The money was much needed and allowed the Evelyns to plan their wedding. The couple were married on June 27, 1928. It was a small ceremony attended only by Evelyn's closest friends. The couple moved into a small apartment in Islington, London. She Evelyn's father or suitors must have cut her off because all of a sudden that £4 a week had to stretch for two people. Financial issues made the Evelyns' first few months of marriage very stressful, even more so when she Evelyn became very ill. Evelyn's novel Decline and Fall was published in September 1928 and was very popular. By December, a third printing was on the shelves and the American rights were sold for $500. The novel earned Evelyn a position as a travel writer. He wouldn't be paid, but would be gifted a Mediterranean cruise. The Evelyns used the trip as a delayed honeymoon. Unfortunately, while on the ship, she, Evelyn, came down with pneumonia, and the couple had to stay in Egypt to get her treatment. It took a while, and the Evelyns didn't return to London until June of 1929. When the couple arrived home, she, Evelyn, decided that it was a good time to tell her husband that she'd been having an affair with he, Evelyn's friend John. The two tried to work things out, but ended up divorcing exactly a year after they'd married. 2 years later, she, Evelyn, married he, Evelyn's friend, John. And according to other friends of the Evelyns, the exes only saw each other one more time, during the annulment process. He, Evelyn, was understandably devastated by his ex-wife's infidelity and the divorce, and told his friend Harold that he, quote, did not know it was possible to be so miserable and live. And hey, that's exactly the same reason why I had to go on a year and a half hiatus. But Evelyn recovered from his heartbreak faster than I did and soon finished his second novel, the satirical Vile Bodies. He also authored an article about the meaning of marriage ceremonies, which I'm sure didn't sting at all. It seems overdramatic to say that following his divorce, Evelyn was homeless, but he basically was. For 8 years, he floated around, staying with the friends he was slowly making post-divorce. During that time, while working on his own writing, he had articles published in The Graphic, Town and Country, and Harper's Bazaar. He wrote biographies and travel books and book reviews. And because he had become an established writer, he was able to ask for the amount of money he wanted, not just accept what was offered to him. Evelyn had left religion behind when he got to high school, but in 1930, he joined the Catholic Church. His family and friends were surprised, but it seems Evelyn was looking for anything to give him comfort and routine. And if there's anything that's dependable for routine in this world, it's the Catholic Church. As a travel journalist, Evelyn traveled the world. Abyssinia, Guyana, East African colonies, the Congo, and Brazil were just a few of his destinations. He covered events like the coronation of Emperor Haile Selassie. His travels inspired his 1931 novel Remote People, his 1932 novel Black Mischief, and his 1934 novel A Handful of Dust. But when Evelyn returned home from a trip to South America, it was to the ire of the Catholic Church, or more specifically, a Catholic literary journal called The Tablet. They'd read his novel Black Mischief and accused Evelyn of obscenity and blasphemy. Evelyn defended himself, but he wasn't willing to walk away from the church. So as a kind of olive branch, he offered to write a biography of the Jesuit martyr Edmund Campion. The Tablet accepted this offer. The biography was published in 1935, and that too caused a religious stir, this time with Protestants. And yet, Evelyn still won the Hawthornden Prize for High Quality Imaginative Literature, an interesting prize to win for a nonfiction book. While all this kerfuffle was going on with the church, Evelyn had one more complaint for them. He was in love. But even though he, Evelyn, and she, Evelyn, had been divorced years before, the Catholic Church doesn't accept divorce papers from plebes. The rules said that he, Evelyn, couldn't remarry until she, Evelyn, died, and she was healthy as a horse. She, Evelyn, by the way, didn't care what the church thought and married almost immediately after the divorce was final, and would marry a different guy in 1937. But for he, Evelyn's part, he was conflicted. He wanted God to still like him, but then there was Laura, whom he also wanted to like him. During the annulment process of his marriage in 1933, while travel writing on a cruise in the Greek islands, he was introduced to Gabrielle Herbert, the oldest daughter of the late explorer Aubrey Herbert. The two got on so well that Evelyn was invited to stay at the Herbert family villa in Italy at the conclusion of the cruise. And that's where he met Laura. Now, his interest in Laura was questionable from the start, as when they met, Evelyn was 30 and Laura was 17. Even older sister Gabrielle was only 22 at the time. But the Herberts weren't bothered by the age gap, only what the church might think of a divorcee marrying their daughter. They were devout Catholics as well. Even so, they gave their blessing when Evelyn proposed by letter, and the two were married on April 17, 1937, at a Catholic church in London. Laura seems to have been a good match for Evelyn, though, as she was described as gentle, long-suffering, and independent-minded. As a wedding gift, Laura's grandmother bought the couple a house near Gloucestershire. Remember the days when a shack didn't cost $500,000 and stellar credit? Over the next 13 years, the couple would produce 7 children: Marie, Auberon, Mary, Margaret, Harriet, James, and Septimus. Sadly, Mary died just a few hours after she was born in 1940. Only slightly less sadly, Evelyn was reportedly a really bad dad to all of his kids except his favorite, Margaret, born in 1942. When World War II broke out in the late 1930s, Evelyn sent Laura and the so far two kids to Somerset to be near Laura's family, and then he joined the Royal Marines. At the time of training, Evelyn was only in his late 30s, but according to Evelyn, the drills left him, quote, with so stiff a spine that he found it painful to even pick up a pen. Like when he was a writer and not a soldier, Evelyn traveled to West Africa and the Mediterranean, this time with his unit. He saw very little action and returned home in July of 1940. Evelyn remained in the Marines, however, until 1942. In those years, he was often promoted to officer positions, but very quickly removed from each of them. Evelyn had something of a persecution complex, and he tried to defend against the perceived persecution by bullying his inferiors. In May of 1942, Evelyn was transferred to the Royal Horse Guards, which saw him traveling to North Africa. But after a parachuting injury in late 1943, Evelyn left the Marines with paid medical leave the following January. While the parachuting injury was a good excuse to retire, Evelyn had already been itching to go back home so that he could start work on his next novel, Brideshead Revisited. If any titles of Evelyn's should sound familiar to you, Brideshead Revisited should, as it was made into a movie with some pretty big names in 2008. Emma Thompson, Hayley Atwell, and Matthew Good played three of the leads. When the novel came out in 1945, it was a huge success, bringing Evelyn great fame and fortune. I find it interesting that Brideshead Revisited is considered a very religious novel, Catholic to be precise, because the book is fairly autobiographical of Evelyn's days at Oxford, which is to say, full of debauchery and sin. And the main character, Charles, is the one doing these things, even though we're usually supposed to root for the main character. However, the book ends up with Charles alone and sad after a life of bad choices, while his friend Sebastian and all those at Brideshead live better lives due to their strong faith. I guess the church was willing to overlook the alcoholism and sex for that message. Evelyn's biographer, Martin Stannard, observed that Brideshead had started a religious pattern. Beginning with that book, Stannard felt that Evelyn got a little preachy about how great Catholic morals were in his writing, and used it to do less telling and more showing the reader whom they were supposed to cheer for. After the success of Brideshead Revisited, Evelyn continued to be a terrible father, and instead of going home to his family, spent the next 7 years traveling internationally, cranking out a novel every 2 or so years. Brideshead was in talks to be made into a Hollywood film, and Evelyn flew out to California for meetings, but nothing ever came of it. Despite not being home much, and despite being in his late 40s, Evelyn managed to create 2 more children with Laura. He was not, however, any more paternal. He wrote around this time, "I have numerous children whom I see once a day for 10, I hope, awe-inspiring minutes." And that's on the rare occasion that he was home. Entering his 50s, Evelyn was described as old for his years, selectively deaf, rheumatic, and irascible. His depression and insomnia were terrible, and he became dependent on alcohol and drugs to deal with them. Despite Evelyn's success since Brideshead, less than a decade earlier, by 1953 it was becoming impossible for Evelyn to get commissioned to write. His moment in the spotlight was over, so editors didn't really want to pay him well to write articles and books, and even if they did, he was having awful writer's block. He was down to his last bit of his fortune, and partly due to the alcohol and drug abuse, his health was failing. Where he was living might have had an effect, too. He wrote of it, "I live in a shabby stone house in which nothing is under 100 years old except the plumbing, and that does not work. I have a fast-emptying cellar of wine and gardens fast reverting to jungle." Substance abuse aside, Evelyn's cottage was probably not a healthy environment, especially with the English rain keeping things perpetually damp. Evelyn began to have memory problems, and in early 1954, his concerned doctors suggested that he take a trip. Evelyn chose Sri Lanka, and given his heavily stamped passport, the boat journey there should have been a piece of cake. Evelyn had plans to finish his latest novel upon arriving in Sri Lanka. But just a few days into the trip, Evelyn became overtaken with paranoia. He wrote to his wife that the other passengers were whispering about him, and also that he was hearing voices. He described to Laura the group of existentialists he believed were on board the boat and waging telepathic war on him. He tried to write to distract himself, but told Laura that every sentence he wrote was, quote, immediately repeated by a bodiless voice. When the ship docked in Egypt, Evelyn got off and instead took a plane to Sri Lanka, but told Laura that the voices followed him. Later, he would label his behavior as him being clean off his onion. And apparently Laura agreed, because after receiving her husband's letters, she sent the husband of a friend to get Evelyn from Sri Lanka. Somehow, though, Evelyn returned on his own, and by now he was convinced that he was possessed by the devil, even asking a priest for an exorcism. Instead, he went to see a doctor who diagnosed him with bromide poisoning due to the heavy sedative use. It is believed that the bromide was prescribed to Evelyn, but like the sedatives of today, plenty of people found ways to abuse it. The doctor prescribed him a different drug, and the voices and hallucinations stopped. We love an attentive 1950s doctor. Once he was feeling better and able to write again, Evelyn spent a few years working on a fictionalized version of his mental health collapse called The Ordeal of Gilbert Pinfold. The publishers had the very modern idea of essentially getting the word pinfold trending. The invented surname and the identical phrase were supposed to mean half crazy, and the publishers wanted it to become a household term. That didn't happen, but a lot of good did come from the novel. People who suffered from mental illness really related to it, and one woman wrote to Evelyn asking if his voices had been real because she'd been hearing voices for 18 months and had barely slept because of them. Digby Goddard Fenwick, one of Evelyn's old schoolmasters, wrote to Evelyn expressing not only sympathy, but empathy. Digby also had auditory hallucinations. When Evelyn was turning 50, he'd been labeled old before his years, and by the time he turned 60, he was solidly the kind of curmudgeon usually found in octogenarians. He hated all things modern, including fountain pens and phones. He could often be found using an ear trumpet. He hated modern media and said that all American reporters were whiskey drunks, and all Americans in general had been divorced at least once. A rather rich insult coming from an alcoholic divorcee. As Evelyn entered his 60s, his physical and mental health went more and more downhill. He was spending money he didn't have, which saw him resorting to selling items from around his home. He didn't seem to register the news that his oldest son, Oberon, was severely wounded in a military shooting accident, and when Oberon was well enough to be transported home, Evelyn made any and all excuses not to see him until it couldn't be avoided. Biographer Stannard described Evelyn at this point as an exhausted rogue jollied up by drink. Evelyn agreed, calling himself toothless, deaf, melancholic, shaky on my pins, unable to eat, full of dope, and quite idle. Evelyn may have considered himself idle, but others might not, considering that he did continue to write, winning the Royal Society of Literature's Companion of Literature title, and also worked on his autobiography, which he planned to release in parts. Given how ornery Evelyn had become, and let's be honest, always had been, friends and acquaintances were worried about how Evelyn was going to portray them in his autobiography. But when the first volume came out, Evelyn had been kind enough to change their names when he wanted to insult them, and didn't reveal all of their secrets. By the time Evelyn was 62, he declared that all fates are worse than death. He was ready to check out. And check out he did on April 10th, 1966, after attending Easter Mass with his family. Despite his devout Catholicism, Evelyn was buried in an Anglican cemetery in Somerset. I don't know how many people attended Evelyn's funeral, if indeed they were even able to do so, but despite Evelyn's misanthropic interior, friends and families were aggrieved by his passing. Biographer Paula Byrne said that Evelyn's hard outer shell was just put on, and didn't repel those who loved Evelyn best. One friend, Elot Slater, wrote that Evelyn's perhaps befuddling popularity throughout his life came down to, quote, rare but endearing evidence of warm affections, generosity, and schoolboy honor. And he was forgiven, too, because of the riches he gave to the world as an exquisite delineator of character, a great wit, an irresponsible farceur, and in black humor, a genius without equal. Another literary friend described Evelyn as frighteningly witty and so fearfully rude, terribly conceited, of course, and rather ridiculous, but such a good writer. Despite knowing about Brideshead Revisited, I had no idea who Evelyn Waugh was until I started researching this episode, and I have never seen him studied in school, which is remarkable considering how prolific, successful, and talented he was. However, he's still celebrated as an author, if on a smaller scale than some of his peers, and his impressive career cannot be denied. Thanks for checking out We're All Mad Here. If you'd like to know where I've been, this is the time to find out. I hope everyone has had a lovely year and a half since I've been gone. I have not been having a good time, or rather I wasn't for the first 8 or so months of my podcasting break. And while I haven't covered depression on the pod, I do have depression myself, and it really took over everything. Starting in the fall of 2021, I started feeling really run down, was having trouble forming sentences, and was getting really violently painful migraines. And I was pretty convinced that I had a brain tumor. Thankfully, an MRI showed that I did not have a brain tumor, and what ended up being the cause of my fatigue and cognitive issues and rapid 30-pound weight gain was Hashimoto's hypothyroidism. Now, a year and a half later, I still have a lot of fatigue, but my thyroid is pretty much controlled by medication. In November 2021, the same month that I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, my partner of 7 years, with whom I'd been discussing marriage, told me that he was really unhappy in our relationship, and long story short, we did 6 months of couples counseling and he ended up breaking up with me 4 months in. While couples counseling as well as individual counseling did make the breakup hit a little less hard, I was still in a deep depression, not eating, self-harming. It was a bad time. We had to keep living together for about 4 months after the breakup because I'm poor, which didn't make things any easier, even though before and after the breakup, we weren't the type to fight and there was no abuse going on, etc. Podcasting wasn't the only thing that fell by the wayside due to all of this going on. I stopped practicing my ukulele, I was barely on TikTok despite having a fairly large following, and I wasn't auditioning, which I used to do at least once a week. I really hate that it took me a year and a half to get back into podcasting, but I think it was because it was so labor-intensive when I left it that it was hard to start back up again. So though I am back, I'm going to be taking this at my own pace. I hope I can do a new episode every other week, but I don't want to make promises and I don't want to burn myself out just as I've returned. In any case, I am glad to be back. Websites for specific podcasts seem to be going out of style, so I probably won't be using my site anymore, but I'll still be posting things on the show's Instagram every time an episode comes out. I also have a Patreon, though for right now, the only benefit will be getting the episode a little early, and of course, supporting me financially if you feel like doing that. But I'm really thankful that so many of you have waited for me. I know some of you follow me on TikTok, and I've appreciated the messages that I've gotten, and I'm really excited to be back. Recording this episode has felt really familiar and really nice. So I will see you guys next time.